From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, Governor Cuomo signs into law a measure that would create new penalties for people who make bomb threats against community centers. Our political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on growing pressure for a group of breakaway Democrats in the state Senate to reunite and form a majority with mainstream Democrats. And over $60 million in grants will support drinking water and wastewater infrastructure projects across the state. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Governor Andrew Cuomo signed into law this week a measure that would create new penalties for people who make bomb threats against community centers. The actions stem from bomb threats made to Jewish community centers in New York and around the nation last winter. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt with more.
Cuomo, in a statement, says anyone who falsely makes bomb threats to a community center can now be charged with a Class A misdemeanor offense, punishable by up to a year in jail. For Assembly sponsor Amy Paulin of Westchester, the bomb threats last winter became personal. Her local JCC, 1 mile from her home, where she swims and sends her children to classes, was among those targeted.
At the time where the bomb threat was called in, there were nursery school and toddlers in the building, and they had to be evacuated. And this is a busy These are busy intersections, and they had to march all of these children to safety. And that's scary, too, you know, marching them across big streets with a lot of traffic. And we had seniors in the building. You know, this should not be.
Senator Patrick Gallivan, the bill's sponsor in the Senate, is a former Erie County sheriff. He says he was surprised to learn that there was no actual law against calling a bomb threat into a community center.
Come to find out, there was not a law in place that actually covered this.
Gallivan from Western New York says the measure adds community centers of all types to an existing law that covers bomb threats to public gathering spaces, including schools, parks, and hotels.
The legislation actually changes the definition of public place in the penal law to now include community centers where somebody might call them a threat. They can then be charged with an offense under the penal law.
In the cases last winter, an Israeli teenager was eventually caught and charged with making some of the threats as part of a profit-making business on an illegal internet site. But the sponsors of the bill say they think in the current political climate that included 3 deaths in Charlottesville, Virginia, during a white supremacist rally over the weekend, people are right to be worried that something like the false bomb threats might happen again. President Trump on Monday called out the Charlottesville demonstrators, saying racism is evil and the KKK, neo-Nazis, and white supremacists are repugnant to American values. Trump was under pressure for not naming the groups or specifically condemning them after the violence erupted on Saturday. Gallivan, a Republican, says he's happy that the president spoke out more strongly.
When he came out and condemned the actions over the weekend, I thought it was appropriate that he spoke out. And looking at it and seeing the people's criticism, I understand why some people were upset, not thinking that he's gone far enough. Mm-hmm. And I am now glad that he's come out and clarified and been very strong and unequivocal.
Paulin, a Democrat, agrees that Trump said the right things Monday, but she says it could have happened sooner.
It's just a little shocking that it took all this public pressure to get him to do that. But it's hatred. It's so obvious, and we need a strong leader to call it hatred when it is. Whatever side it's on, whoever's doing it.
Both Paulin and Gallivan say that everyone needs to dial back the rhetoric. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Music.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gastina. Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Alan, the ripple effect from Charlottesville, Virginia, did not avoid New York, where thousands gathered as President Trump arrived for a visit to Trump Tower to shout, in many cases, shame. Since then, we've seen all over the country these symbols being taken down, statues in some cases, Robert E. Lee and others. In New York, Governor Cuomo has written to the acting Secretary of the Army, Ryan McCarthy, and he says the streets in New York City, named after Generals Robert E. Lee and Thomas Stonewall Jackson, should be changed after these events. Of course, racism is everywhere.
Well, it is in Charlottesville. It's become a very potent word, of course, as you know, and it is a reference point for everybody. But yes, I was in New Orleans, proud to be there, when they took down one major statue. There is going to be a real reflection here. Perhaps the very opposite of what Donald Trump wanted is happening in this country, as anti-racist rejection of false equivalency between neo-Nazis and everybody else by the president go forward. Every bit of our politics, the wind has been sucked out of everything that is going on. We know that there is no patience for this with the American people, not for the people whose fathers and grandfathers fought in the World War and fought the Nazis and gave up their lives for this. And to say, here's the president saying they're good people on both sides. And this is very potent stuff. I suspect we're going to see a whole realignment of our politics based on this. And there is nobody in the state legislature or anywhere else who isn't going to be affected by this rhetoric. You watch and see, we're going to see a huge realignment in our electoral process. The political scientists call it a realigning election. I think 2018 is going to be very interesting.
Governor Cuomo also this week, Alan, signed a law, a measure that would create new penalties for people who make bomb threats against community centers. Of course, the action comes from the threats to many Jewish community centers, including in New York's Capital Region, near where we broadcast from, and that has happened well before Charlottesville, including last winter.
David, I was in New York. I was by a Jewish community center. The other day, they've got huge cement blocks out in front. You can't drive up onto that sidewalk, that's for sure. Look, we know that the Trumpian language has incentivized an awful lot of people who think that they are hearing the president telling them what to do, who will take advantage of, you know, this moment to let all of their hate and anger out. And it's a terrible thing that this one man has done in order to advance his own personal political career in politics. It's just awful.
Pressure is growing, Alan, and we've been talking about this all along for the Independent Democratic Conference, those that split away from the mainline Democrats in the New York Senate, to unite. The key players here that we're hearing of course, Governor Andrew Cuomo, Bronx Democrat Jeff Klein, and Senator Gianaris.
Some people have called the breakaway Democrats traitors, and the assumption is that what they did was to go over to support the Republicans and keep them in power. And then they got some rewards for it. They got some committee chairmanships. They got some extra money known as Lulus. And I've never understood quite how that could work. I mean, we're talking about their leader, Jeff Klein, from where? The Bronx. He's a Bronx Democrat. So what is that about? How do you get away with that? Well, I think the game is up. They've been condemned by the New York congressional delegation. They are under tremendous pressure. The governor, who a lot of people think is sort of responsible for their very existence because he doesn't call them into a room and say, this is what you're going to do or you're going to get a primary opponent. The governor is obviously under strong pressure. He's going to have a rough election 2018. He's got collected over $25 million already. But we all saw when Zephyr Teachout, coming from the left, did beat him in almost all the upstate counties. And that was with no money when she had it the last time. So this is going to be an interesting election. If Cuomo doesn't reject the neo-Republican Democrats, who have basically kept the Republicans in power, he could be subjected to a fierce blowback because most people assume that it's the governor who has kept these guys in power. And this is really where the rubber hits the road.
Speaking of coming elections, we've seen a number of candidates announce, including Democrats, to face Governor Andrew Cuomo in a primary. One of them, Stephanie Miner, the mayor of Syracuse. I see a Spectrum News Siena poll, Alan, that she's popular there, but at this point loses to Cuomo.
You look, there's an old saying that in order to win the gubernatorial nomination, you have to be from New York City. That's where the Democrats are. They're not upstate. As far as I'm concerned, Stephanie Miner is a great heroine. She had the guts to speak up to a man who looked infallible at the time, Andrew Cuomo, and she gets a lot of credit from me. And you know what? You never know until the election comes, David, what people will do. You can give a poll right now and say, who is Stephanie Miner? Most people in New York State won't know. But hey, if you run for political office, all of a sudden people see you in the full light of day, and that helps you a great deal. So it's way too early, based on early polls, to see whether or not she would win or not. But so far, I have not seen a top-flight candidate emerge who can take on Cuomo. So it could either be that, and we saw it with George Pataki and Mario Cuomo, it could either be that the governor will be running against somebody or running against himself, if you follow my meaning.
How about this story, Alan? Spying on your neighbor's backyard barbecue with video surveillance is now illegal in New York. Cuomo signed a bill cracking down an unauthorized invasion of privacy by video surveillance in the backyard, Alan.
You know, it's interesting because a lot of people have these drones, and the drones have cameras on them, and they can fly right over my yard or the yard of the guy living down the street and can take pictures of who's there. Not only that, what they're wearing or not wearing and everything else. So the governor does something that will be popular. I don't think anybody really wants somebody else's drone coming down over their house. But this is the kind of technology which we are following very closely. And I don't know that it's going to stop law or no law.
Finally, Alan, State Assemblyman Herman Denny Farrell hanging it up after 42 years on the job. He is a Democrat from Manhattan.
I love the guy. I mean, you can't not love him. He is a wonderful man. You know, he's been the number two guy in the assembly for a long, long time. He has looked at running for a city council seat in the past because it brings him closer to home and where he is. This man is a living legend in Albany. I used to ride the bike in the mornings, and the phone would ring, the indoor bike, and there he would be, wanting to talk. Unlike a lot of other politicians, he would always reach out, and he was always fun to talk to. You know, I just am sorry to see this guy, who is now in his 80s, getting out from politics, because it will be poorer without him.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gastina. Governor Andrew Cuomo announced $60.7 million in grants recently that have been approved by the New York State Environmental Facilities Corporation Board of Directors to support drinking water and wastewater infrastructure projects across the state. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas reports.
The board's approval includes nearly $8.4 million in grants awarded under the Water Infrastructure Improvement Act. The Greene County town of Prattsville, still recovering from the 2011 battering it took from Hurricane Irene and Tropical Storm Lee, will get $1.45 million that includes an $872,672 drinking water grant and a $581,782 zero-interest loan. Michael Harrington is with Cobleskill-based Lamont Engineers.
The funded project includes a second well source to replace a well that was damaged in the flood, and it also involves treatment for bromomethane, which the town has been under order from Department of Health to remove from the water source. Also included will be a new well treatment building and some aeration treatment for the bromomethane. Also included will be granular activated carbon, GAC, filtration for removal of the bromomethane.
Harrington adds the project may also include distribution system improvements. The city of Rensselaer will receive $11.9 million to acquire a water storage tank and a portion of the pump station facilities previously built and financed by the Rensselaer Water and Sewer Authority. Several aged and undersized water distribution mains will be replaced throughout the city. $1.6 million will go to the Schoharie County village of Sharon Springs for the design and construction of improvements to its wastewater collection and treatment facilities. New York State Department of Environmental Conservation Commissioner Basil Sagos says Governor Andrew Cuomo has made water quality a priority.
These investments are critical to not just bringing jobs back to some of the municipalities where work is needed, but very importantly, to restoring water quality. I mean, this is all about keeping our waters clean. It's about keeping our municipalities vibrant, good places to work, and good places to live and recreate.
The grants allow the municipalities to finance their projects at a significantly lower rate than financing on their own. The governor's office says New York leads the nation with the largest annual investment in water quality infrastructure of any state.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
The number of candidates challenging second-term Republican Congresswoman Elise Stefanik of New York's 21st District continues to grow. Five Democrats and one Republican are in the race. The Green Party is expected to announce candidates, and a Libertarian has also expressed interest in the seat. St. Lawrence County, New York business consultant Tedra Cobb is among the announced Democrats. She tells the Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley that she decided to run after tracking recent congressional action on health care.
I've participated in the community on many levels, on boards, working in health care, and as a county legislator. And quite frankly, after the health care vote that not only Representative Stefanik voted for, but was lining up votes for, I felt that it was time to get back into my community service through running for office again.
You mentioned the health care vote. Was that the key reason why you decided to run for Congress, or are there other primary issues you're looking at?
There are other key issues. First and foremost, Elise Stefanik votes against the North Country many times, most of the time. Health care, you know, her health care vote is an example of voting against the interests and the safety and security of not only the North Country, because this district is also encompasses, I think, kind of the northern capital region. I mean, such a huge district. And we might be diverse in that we're a huge geographical region, but we're not diverse in terms of our needs, in terms of the security of our families, in terms of the security and safety of our environment, and in terms of the economic vitality of the region, in terms of our families and their, you know, educational needs. There are many issues that I think all of us face in this area, but the healthcare vote in particular, I would say, was maybe the straw that broke the camel's back, or the little nudge that got me, back into, you know, wanting to serve in public office.
Tedra Cobb, as we've talked, you've obviously focused on the incumbent Republican, but there is a very crowded field of Democrats, which means you face primary opponents. What sets you apart from your primary opponents?
My experience as a legislator. For 8 years, I served as a St. Lawrence County legislator, and during my tenure there, you know, led a new ethics law, the creation of and passage of a new ethics law with a board of ethics. St. Lawrence County did not have a board of ethics. You know, I can kind of talk about other things that were successful, but more than anything, it's my experience as an elected official. None of the other candidates have been elected, and that is important in terms of understanding the process and understanding how to work with others to pass legislation, whether it's at the county or whether it's at the town, or whether it's at the state, or whether it's at the congressional level, working with others to pass laws and to identify the needs of the community and make sure that we're working together in the best interest of the community is important. And that happens when you're elected, I think. That experience defines who I am. That is one thing. The other thing is I have served on many boards, North Country Children's Clinic, which is now an FQHC, Renewal House Board, Hospice Board. I can name a whole bunch of boards, but I think my experience in service and serving on boards, as well as starting and running a community health agency, as well as my business experience helping businesses grow, helping not-for-profits, working with the universities, and doing staff development. So my experience in organizational development, all of those things, I think, set me apart from the other candidates.
During a visit to Plattsburgh on August 7th, incumbent Republican Elise Stefanik said regardless of the number of challengers, she is focused on her job and delivering results to the district.
You know, this last election cycle, what I was most excited about is I won every county in this district. We won by over 30 points. That shows, I think, the support I have across party lines. And I ran on my results directly for this district on a local level. I feel confident, but I'm going to focus on doing my job because that's why they voted for me, because they know I'm energetic, I'm hardworking, and I'm common sense and independent-minded and an effective voice for this district in Washington.
Democrats currently in the race include Tedra Cobb, Don Boyajian of Saratoga County, Katie Wilson of Keene, Patrick Nelson from Stillwater, and Emily Martz of Saranac Lake. Republican Russell Finley of Lisbon in St. Lawrence County is looking to force a primary. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1733 or listen to us on the web at WAMC.org or podcast at WAMCpodcasts.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.